Hello and welcome to the Heads and Volleys podcast with me, Lee Dunn. If you've listened to my podcast or read my material online for a while now, you'll know that a lot of what I preach and what I do is all around empowering players and really trying to give players as much autonomy as possible, but then also setting them up for success and not necessarily saying, here's the game, go and play it and I'll wait for you to fail and then help you out, but really trying to give them as many answers as to how we're going to try and play consistently in the same areas of the field. If we're going to play from goal to counter goals, we know that there's always going to be a build-up and things like that that really give the players answers, but often trying to empower them to take their own learning further. So the title of this episode is, Could They Do That at Home? And it comes from the concept that a typical practice is 90 minutes. And I don't know how you feel about 90 minutes of training, but I personally feel like it's too long. And then also when I watch coaches, it feels like they are wasting a lot of time that could otherwise be spent in a better environment for our players. We could be using time better. And the simplest one would be making players do laps, or at the end of practice when players have done quote unquote well, and then they're allowed to go and scrimmage. Now that scrimmage is 20 minutes or however long's left in the session of a coach that may not actually be coaching from what they did in the practice because all of their coaching has been done and the scrimmage is for the players to play, or they're also off talking to the other parents. So we're building upon all of this. My challenge is, when you look at what your last practice was, how much of it could the players have done on their own at home? So the first thing that I'll explore is the idea of technical training. People will often put their players into activities that will work on passing or dribbling or shooting or controlling the ball, all sorts of things like that. It's what I'll call a technical practice, where a coach will spend a lot of time working with the players on how they're going to control the ball, shoot the ball, pass the ball, move the ball in whatever way that the coach has deemed necessary, likely from the game before. Now, if you were to set your players homework and say every day for this week, I want you to work on this, whatever that is, whether it's the coach has made a video of a skill practice that they want them to do, or whether it's a certain amount of juggles that they want them to do each day, whether it's a certain amount of passes and bounces off the wall, whatever that homework is, now suddenly the players are coming to practice. The expectation is that they have been practicing at home. Now they can jump straight into your practice without you necessarily needing to spend 10, 15, 20, maybe even longer minutes on teaching them this technique. Again, if you followed me, you know that I don't necessarily believe in a correct technique. There are better and there are not so good ideas on ways that we can execute. But for the sake of our youth soccer players and their experience, if I've sent them a task of bouncing the ball off the wall with one touch, I'm not really bothered how they're doing it. I'm bothered that they are doing it. So that when they come to our training environment, when they need to play a one-touch pass for whatever reason, whatever situation, if you've got bumpers or if you've got players that it needs to be a one-touch finish or something like that, now suddenly we have players that have become familiar with this at home. Now, I hear you saying, well, my players won't do that. They won't do that at home. They never do that. They're not committed. Maybe they're too busy, quote-unquote busy. But if we tie in the parents and we say, for example, why don't you, for 1 minute before you sit down for dinner, do this with the ball? They eat 3 meals a day, 4 meals, 5 meals, growing boys and girls will eat more probably every time before they have a snack. What they got to do, just bounce the ball off the wall for 1 minute. That's it. How many touches in 1 minute when you do a one-touch bounce off the wall? At least 60. Hopefully we can do one every second. And then it goes faster and faster and faster. So now my players are taking 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, let's say 5 minutes a day of bouncing the ball off the wall. Doesn't seem like a lot, does it? But in reality, we're looking at over 300 touches. We're looking at them doing it for a reason, because as the coach, I've said, I want you to go and do this because. And here is why I want you to do that. When we get into training, when we get into the games, this is an area of our game model that needs to improve. So I want you to do that at home so that when you come, we can jump straight into games. Now we're saving 20 minutes of our training time. Part two is not necessarily something that they could do at home, though they could practice this aspect, but this would be the warm-up. If you work within a club, or if you're working within an environment where you have an organized warm-up, or you have a specific warm-up that you like your players to execute, then can they arrive 10 minutes before training? Can they arrive before training and perform the warm-up so that when it's your turn to step on the field at whatever time, your players are ready to go? They can practice this at home. They can become well-versed in performing the warm-up. They can become well-versed in stretching and understanding what their body needs so that when they come to training, we don't spend 20 minutes waiting for them to perform the FIFA 11 plus. Or you don't disrupt other groups and waste time by having them run laps around the field. Remember a little while ago, I posted a blog post about a quote that I heard where somebody said that running laps builds mental resilience. And I'm not quite sure where that information came from, but I don't want you to build mental resilience by having your players run laps. If anything, we may talk about them becoming more rounded athletes, more better athletes that are ready for themselves and are self-responsible because they're doing these things at home, they're ready to come. Now, of course, they can't really warm up before they get in the car and drive 20 minutes to training, but they can be ready, just like they can be before you get on the field. If there's somebody on the field before you, they are ready to warm up. They are already warming up so that by the time you're allowed on the field as the coach, it takes you a few minutes to set up and the players are ready. Not let me set up players, now warm up. And now we started training at 5:30 and suddenly it's 6 o'clock before we really get into anything. So really looking at, if you have that structure, do your players know it? Do they have it written down? Are they well versed in it so that they are ready to be warming up for themselves? And even if you don't have an organized warm up, do you have an arrival activity? Do you have something that is important that you want them to perform instead of them kind of waiting around, or as the classic is where one kid goes in goal and then 10 of them stand there with a ball each waiting to take it in turns to shoot? And there's nothing worse because they're not warm. As they get older, they're trying to ping it in the top corner or hit the bar. Now they're beginning to overexert themselves before they've really started to warm up, and especially when they're in the middle of their growth spurts, now we're asking for injuries when we can really avoid that by having a structured warm-up that our players will follow. I released an article a little while ago and it was around pre-game routines and having the same pre-game routine all the time, because then your players know what's going on. Now you'd use that pre-game routine in your training environment also, and suddenly we're connecting the dots. We're empowering players, we're giving them answers. There's no surprise, they begin to lead it themselves. If you're somebody who believes in team captains or vying for a player to become a team captain, these are the environments where you look to develop leadership amongst your team, because they will be the ones that will organize. They will be the ones that make sure everybody's performing, make sure everybody's working at the right level of play. Because otherwise, when we go through the kind of routine and the motions of an organized warm-up, once they've done it on Monday, when they come on Tuesday to train, they're doing the same thing and it's just not very exciting, and it's very easy to go into a simple, low-speed kind of warm-up where they're not actually getting ready and they're spending more time talking. And then part three is all about introducing the topics, the periodization, the concepts for what we're going to be working on, whether it's just this one session, whether it's the coming week, whether it's our next cycle, maybe it's the month, maybe it's preparation for a specific game, but really telling your players what to expect. If you use small-sided games, you'll find that over time, they all begin to look very similar, or the learning curve to play them is often much quicker than every time we introduce a new quote-unquote drill with lots of cones and lots of specified movements that often actually annoys the coach more than it annoys the player, because then they're always judging players that their players aren't very clever because they're never moving in the right directions, or they're never following their pass, or whatever the deal comes with that situation. But we play small-sided games. We play a six-goal game, we play a four-goal game, two-goal game, we play a halfway line game, we play an end zone, we play target men. The game is the game. There's direction. It's X amount of players versus X amount of players attacking specific goals. Again, end zones, target players, mini goals, big goal, whatever it is. The games are fairly self-explanatory. I've got another episode coming up shortly where I'm talking about the rules and the consequences that we put within our practice. But for this purpose, a small-sided game is a fairly simple situation for our players to understand. Now, I've talked a lot about using tactical pad, and I send that to my players as much as I can. Or I tag them on Instagram. Or I'll tell them, we did this last week, we're doing it again. We did this yesterday, we're doing it again, except here is this change, or here is that change. And they know it ahead of time. My players are old enough where they all have phones, so I'm able to connect with them on that level. But otherwise, I'm sending them the information of what we're working on. I send their parents an update saying, here is what our next cycle focus is and what that means for them when it comes to games, or what they can talk about with their player. Because my preseason conversation with them was, I'm going to give all the information to your players, and I want you to gather that information from your player and not just ask them how practice was, but right now we're working on exploiting space. So creating and exploiting space, it sounds very general, but it's very specific for our team and specific moments. So then the players can talk about that with their parents. So they know what we're working on. They understand that every session is going to be focused around that. And then they take that home with them for their conversation, but they know what to expect when they come into our training environment. And I think it's really important that it's not just, oh, let's see what happens today, or who knows what we're going to do at practice today. There is a constant theme and it rides throughout for them. And I think it's really empowering for them. So could they do it at home? They could absolutely learn at home. I can send them the training plan. I can send them a video. I could send them clips from YouTube, because YouTube is the number one place where they get their media. I can send them clips on there where they're able to see what I'm talking about, and then they'll see how the practice that we're going to do is executed. So when they come to practice, they know what the practice is going to be. They know what the core of the training is going to be anyway. There's very limited time spent explaining the rules or explaining how the game is going to go, because they've seen it animated. They've seen it in another way on their phones, which is the most personal way that we can get to our players. And then they're ready to go. So that 4 or 5 minutes I've spent where I'm explaining or answering questions or moving things around, I've shaved that off. And now if we really tidy all of this together, if our players are doing that technical training, and I don't say that you don't need to do technical training, but I think that you can do a lot of it at home and have them ready to play. Again, building accountability on them, build that relationship with them where you have a demand of them, much like they have demands of you as the coach. Then when they come to practice, the expectation is that they are going to have been training. So therefore, they can now come and play straight away. Then we've introduced the practices to our players ahead of time. Now, the 20 or 30 minutes that we would have spent around all of those aspects are no longer needed. Now you think, we could do 60 minutes of training and we could go full on for that entire time. But as it goes right now, and next time you're on the field, maybe with your own session, just take a look around at what's going on. Take a look around at how much time is actually wasted in training. When players are coming to you for specific training, I think that we are not serving them or underserving them when we're only actually really challenging them for a third or for two-thirds of a training session, because the rest of it they could have done on their own. The rest of it we could have adapted in a special way that would make it more beneficial for everyone involved. So to wrap this up, I know that number one concern will be cost. If parents are paying a certain amount of money and they've probably been promised a certain amount of practice time, we can always reformat that, or hopefully you're in an environment that can reformat that if you believe in some of the things that I've just shared here. The concept of having players training on their own is something that can involve parents. It can help them see what they've invested into, and that it's not just the 1.5 hours on a Monday and a Tuesday and a Wednesday that they're getting, but they're getting this holistic development. They're getting this player that's being challenged at home. They're being given their own opportunities to succeed or to deliver and be willing to be a part of this environment. And I think that if you believe in that, and if you're in that environment that's going to support that, I really encourage you to just think outside the box a little bit more and look at how we can really challenge our players to be better, to grow the culture of the game, to become more of a playing culture. We talk a lot about how kids don't go to the park and play anymore. They don't go and play with their friends anymore like they used to. They don't play on the street anymore. And I think that they require the structure. This is a level of structure that I am really happy with providing to our players, and saying the expectation, or you've set this expectation for yourself that you're going to do this every day. And you agree with it. We're a team. We're all going to do it. And then away we go. And I think COVID has been really good for that, because of the need to shift gears and train on Zoom and to deliver homework to our players. And whilst a lot of it early on was probably busy work that was created, I know I created some busy work too, kind of felt like we were still justifying our paycheck when we weren't actually on the field. But to take away a lot of the positives, there's a new way to connect with our players, and there's a new way to challenge them. So when you plan your session plans now, when you look at your practice for today or tomorrow, or the session that you just did if you're driving home right now, think about how much of it the players could have done at home. Disregard the fear of trust or them actually doing it, because you'll begin to identify who those players are over time. You'll have captains in there that will become leaders. You can do all sorts of team building around this too, but really look at how much of it they could have done at home and how you could really amplify the stuff that they can't do at home in your training environment. Because the reality is, if we're spending the best part of 50% of every session teaching stuff that the players could already be doing at home, then we're really losing valuable time for the valuable stuff that's going to help them perform better in the weekends. And of course, that's what we're here for as coaches, to help them perform.